You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
So welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We have a great conversation coming up today. Our guest is Nancy Duarte, who is a best-selling author, in fact, has a book coming out today, and is a CEO of Duarte. And so we're going to hear a lot about what Nancy's been doing, and we're going to have a great conversation about a different way for businesses in Orange County to go to market. So welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405, Nancy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about your new book.
Yeah, so I have a new book that's just launching called Data Story, and it's how to explain data and inspire action through story. So there's just so much data. Everyone's dealing with data, and a lot of people don't know how to explain it. So even here in my own shop, I've had data analysts, but due to poor communication skills or a struggle to communicate, I think it slows down decision-making if you don't have a way to communicate data in a very clear and palatable way. So that's what the book is about. I'm super excited about it. It's really hitting a nerve. CEOs are buying it for all their employees. Employees are buying it for themselves. And so it kind of goes up and down the entire organization because data is so critical. Mm-hmm. And yet people, there is no methodology to communicate in a way that both the CEO and the data analyst will both understand with a common understanding. And
right.
That's about, yeah.
And it is really one of the key components for a business to run is having data that comes in regularly.
Exactly.
So I want to spend a little time today picking your brain, getting you to help us think through when a product or a service is a game changer for an area or not just one company. And it's you know, not just focusing on how do I get one company to buy my product or my service, but when a company is offering something that's going to dramatically change the way that businesses in an area work and have some significant financial advantages, how do you turn that from just the typical marketing messages, which underneath it all is buy my stuff? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have lots of ways of turning it into conversations with people, but ultimately we measure it. Was it effective? Did they buy my stuff? To move it from that to, we have a movement here that we want to engage you, enroll you into. How would we do that? Because that's something I think you've spent a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah, you know, I've had the privilege of working with like the highest performing brands in the world, helping them communicate. And I think part of the method that we start with, because you don't go from, you know, having no customers to being a movement, it builds up over time, right? So one of the things that is very important as the communicator, so often, especially when you've got this great product that's got all these great offers and you know it's going to change the world, sometimes as the communicator, we go in feeling like we're the hero, like our product's going to change lives. We're the hero of everything and adopt us because we're your hero. And what has to happen as the communicator and marketer of our own businesses and products is we need to understand that the customer is the hero. We are the facilitator. We are the mentor in the process, and your customers are the hero. And that's the first thing you have to realize, because you can communicate all day, and if the people you're communicating to do not adopt your idea will die. It will just die. And so this stance of you as the communicator coming alongside someone else and helping them get unstuck is very important for you to realize that's what is the most critical thing a leader can do. So in Illuminate is kind of the book you're hinting at. One of the things we celebrate so much is Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, right? It's just like, oh, it's so beautiful. For that book, we analyzed all the speeches he gave when he and his followers, the ones that were creating this movement, the civil rights movement, they were so discouraged. They were so discouraged. And he's trying to pep them up. He's trying to acknowledge how hard it's been. The fact that he even wanted to concede failure. We really looked at these moments where they were pivotal moments in a movement. And we used these moments to help leaders understand how it feels to be in the trenches. That whole book is about what your customers look like when it's in the middle of the trenches so they can stick with the long game to create a movement. And so I think that's a long answer. So my deep apologies, but I think net is whoever you're speaking to, they are the ones that are going to make or break your idea. So you need to communicate with them in a way that when they are in the middle of the fray or they're in the long, hard climb, you are communicated in a way that gives them the emotional fuel to keep going. That's what they need, is emotional fuel to make sure your movement becomes a reality. I hope that kind of answered what you were kind of.
Well, I mean, we were talking about the entrepreneurial operating system. I mean, the 10, 12 implementers here in Orange County. Mm-hmm. And our experience is we see tremendous change in companies that adopt this. Mm-hmm. You said that you've worked with a lot of companies who've used it. So it is a system that can make a big difference for companies where the leadership wants to make the change.
Right.
So building into that movement, it seems to me that part of that is a change of our mentality from I just want another client to how do we build this movement?
Yeah, I think I love the whole entrepreneur operating system. I love the Traction book. Rocked my world when I read it. I refer it. I encourage people to hire coaches all the time because it's so important. And I think that the scale of a movement, what's interesting about movements is it really is about moving people in mass and instilling a new way of behaving and believing into a large group of people, right? And you know firsthand, you have a front row seat at the transformative nature of this material. And so, you know, I can hear it in your voice. You're wanting like, how can the entire Southern California area be transformed, right? And you're that passionate, impassioned, mm-hmm. you know, Dr. King-like figure that's trying to say, oh my gosh, all these people could be transformed if they start to believe and behave this way. It's a journey. I think how many times, like, look at how many times leaders like Steve Jobs have had to get up and say the same thing over and over and over when he was leading a movement of restoring that Apple back to its glory. It takes tenacity and it takes the kind of passion where people can really understand that a movement is needed. Mm-hmm. And part of my expertise is you could kind of say we are spoken word experts because it would be hard to point to a movement that didn't start with some sort of impassioned plea. And we're kind of in the impassioned plea business, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that once you craft that and you really understand it, you have to shout it from the mountaintops. It's your vision of a transformed future of how medium and small businesses can thrive and grow. And I think you have to start as a contagion and of your vision, which is like one of the most important steps in the book, Illuminate. That's the very first step, is you cast your dream, right? You kind of stand on the hilltop and you're just casting your dream. And then the second phase is they commit. They're like, oh my God, I love that vision. I want that for my company. And they commit, you know, and you know this because they need coaches. Once you commit to something like the entrepreneur operating system, then it's a fight and a climb. You're in the messy middle of a story. It's fight, climb, fight, climb, fight, climb, you know, and it takes work to transform an organization into one that's running an entrepreneur operating system like that. And so the leader needs to take a moment and be like, oh my gosh, this commitment. Oh, I read this great book. I want to make this commitment. The grind and heat and pressure it puts on the actual people doing the work. So that whole model in there is supposed to be an empathetic tool. So the leader can look at it and be like, oh my gosh, I am putting my team, this is not going to be easy on them. And they're supposed to, my hope was leaders would put on new lenses mm-hmm. to see more empathetically what everyone has to go through when you're driving them toward a new future that's different from the current realities.
Now, when I listening to that, something came through to me was there is a difference in saying, I want to talk to you about your business and how it can change. That's, mm-hmm. I want to get another client kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. There's another that has to do with when you were talking about the vision. Mm-hmm. And for instance, I mean, when Gino Wickman 17 years ago, he said in 2020, we're going to have 10,000 clients that have used our system, the EOS system, 10,000. And we're on track right now to get that 10,000.
Nice.
All right. And in fact, we're talking about how we're going to celebrate that in 2021 by taking implementers and families and all that and going someplace. All right. So that's a vision.
That's cool.
Our next step is, oh, okay, since we got that nailed down, then in 2030, we're going to have 100,000. Mm. Now that is a movement.
Yep.
All right.
Well, unless you look at the 10,000, all the people, those are just the companies. Think about all the people that are impacted. I bet at 10,000, that could be 300,000, right? I
absolutely.
Mean, people, right?
Absolutely.
That's huge. Yeah. Right.
Now, to me, to cast that vision is different from saying, here, you have a problem, you have a pain, and I'm going to solve it for you. To say, here is the world that could be all the things that you talked about in Illuminate about casting that vision, right? Mm-hmm. Here's where we are and here's where we can be. Mm-hmm. What did you call them? There were three steps there in casting that vision.
In casting the vision, there's a three-act story for sure. So
yes.
You cast the vision and you get a commitment.
Uh-huh.
And then the middle is the messy middle. When you think about a movie like, I don't know, even Lord of the Rings, let's just say, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have Frodo, he gets a ring, and then he commits to a journey. But that happens pretty quickly. Then, oh my gosh, he's wandering all over the place, bumping into orcs and spiders, and it's hard. And then ultimately he lands back in the Shire happy again, right?
Mm-hmm.
That messy middle is like all the time. And so as a leader, we're supposed to understand the fact that just because you know what the destination is going to be for your journey doesn't mean the journey is going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a marvelous dream. And the fact that you also are thinking about how to celebrate is a really big deal. That's like a rite of passage, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've had a goal for a long time of 10,000. You're about to pass it. And then look, the new leader is like, oh no, psych, it's not 10, it's 100,000.
Right.
And you have to motivate people again.
Yes.
To do the whole thing over. How do I fight, climb, so that I could actually arrive at this other place? And so that's a real vision. That's someone saying, hey, I have a vision that this could be a bigger deal and more people need to know it. And to do that, you there's tools every leader needs in their tool belt. They need to know how to give speeches, tell stories, and host ceremonies and understand some of the symbols that are part of the movement. And we don't talk about ceremonies very often, but you said one right then. We need to have a celebration. That is a victory ceremony. And we don't do enough of that. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But there's these moments where everyone needs to have confidence that they have passed a milestone, and we need to be really intentional in wiring those in as a communication device as we're leading a movement.
Well, when you use Frodo as the example, what I see Frodo doing is he has this mission that's been laid upon him to take the ring to throw it into the depths of the what's that?
Into Sauron.
Sauron. He's going to throw it into the volcano, right? And mm-hmm. all along the way, he is enrolling all of these other people
yes.
in the movement.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so what I'm hearing is that there is a place for us in Orange County or Southern California to celebrate and to enroll people into the movement, not just to buy a service.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
and that means that some of our if I said those 800 people, 800 companies that are within 10 miles of my session room, that those 800 people, I can address them as part of the people I want to enroll in the movement.
Exactly. That's the commitment phase. So I just grabbed, the book has a really cool fold out inside the book. And what's interesting is you've got this dream that this is a good tool for entrepreneurs to have. It's the moment of decision that also has a time for a ceremony. So when they do commit, there's different things that you could do, like a commitment ceremony, or they're pledging to make it. Certain times when they're starting to really get in and it gets hard, because it does get hard to transform an organization to be excellent and thriving, like the entrepreneur operating system, is there's moments where you have to rally their spirits. There's times where they are, it's just sometimes too hard. It's sometimes really hard, right? And the program's amazing. And when you put the hard work, it has a payoff. But sometimes people need to, they get scared. They don't want to keep going. They think it might not be worth it. And these are moments where a leader needs to identify the fatigue and or emotional well of the people, and then offer them something, either through a speech, a story, a ceremony, or even a rallying symbol, to get them to keep going. Because change is hard, and yet it's glorious. What these programs offer is so good, but people have to do a lot of hard work to get them done, you know.
And what I'm seeing is that if I use that 800 people just as the metaphor, that what I really want to be doing is I want them to be celebrating along with me when somebody makes the commitment. Exactly. So it's not, you know, a piece that goes out is not, oh, look, Will Crist got another client. It's, oh, there's another company who has joined the movement.
Yeah, exactly. And then how do people rally around them with the wisdom, the insights? Like, you look at all the people that rally around a hero in a movie, right? They have people who keep them encouraged. They have people who challenge them. And I think if it is a movement, it's the responsibility of the whole. It's not necessarily a leader standing up and yelling, hey, everyone head this direction, right? What you've got is you've got a lot of people committed to it. And then, you know, as the leader, your job is to rally them to keep going and keep encouraging each other in the fray.
And so it seems to me that part of what we might want to be thinking about in Southern California is what are those pieces there? What is the current condition?
Yeah.
What did you call it? The
what could be?
What could
yeah.
be?
What is?
What could
what
be?
Could be.
And how do we go about doing that?
Yeah, I think that's awesome, because what happens is when you have a vision that other people want, it creates desire. It creates desire for them to want an alternate future. So in my book, Resonate, actually, I explained how you communicate so that you move people from what is to what could be. Now, the first thing you have to do is define that. So you have to say, wow, okay, today people are behaving and believing like this, and tomorrow I want them to behave and believe like that, right? This is the what could be. Now, if they do choose to behave and believe a different way, there has to be something in it for them. There has to be something at stake. Like, they either get good stakes or they avoid bad stakes. But either way, there's always something at stake. And as a communicator, you can actually structure a conversation. You can structure a blog post. You can structure a case study. You can structure a presentation using the gap and the contrast between what is and what could be as a structural device. So I do have a TED Talk. It's had 2.5 million views, where I go over Steve Jobs's iPhone launch speech, and I juxtaposed it to Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, and they both used contrast in a very different way, but they both used contrast of the gap between today's current realities and the desire for the way the future would look, you know, in the future. And it's a powerful communication device. Once people can see the contrast, like your message when you're talking to these people is, wow, you know, is your exec team aligned? Let's picture, this is what an exec team that's aligned looks like. Are you moving initiatives forward by the quarter? Oh, you're not? Just imagine how much you can get done. So we just did even the simple thing of going to quarterly, we call them one thing goals,
yes,
quarterly department goals. We got more done so far in 3 quarters this year than we got done in the 3 years previously combined, right? But wow, the whining and complaining and the accountability, you know. But
all
wow.
of that's learning how, right? Because what I say is that EOS is two things. One, it helps you get things done, and that's what you're celebrating. The second thing it does is it teaches you how to get things done. Because my experience is when we go in, we call those rocks, what you call the one thing. All right. So when we set those rocks for the you know, everybody has their own rocks, and there's four or five company rocks, and we, you know, in our initial time, they have 3 months to get it done. And then we get back together and we ask, how many did you get done? Because we want 80% of them done. Now that's not 100%, 80% done. That's all of them, but we want 80% of them 100% done.
Yeah.
And it's rare. I've never had it happen when a company comes back and the leadership team has over 60% of them done the first time because they don't know how. And that's not a bad thing because they're going to learn. Because yeah, they're gonna, and once they learn, then they can get to the place where they have 80% or more every time. And, yeah. And you know, it was like, oh, that rock was too big. And I gotta next time think about how I get part of it done, I didn't realize the vendor was gonna take so long, or there were gonna be four or five different vendors they had to coordinate, or it was too small and I forgot about it. So all of these learnings that people have help them to actually get things done.
What do you find? How long have you seen the typical time it takes to get the quarterly traction to where everyone, because we do, we tend to do that. We're like, yeah, I could bite that off in a quarter, right? Yeah. And it's just like, what was I thinking? How long do you think it takes an organization to really get traction on the quarterly goals?
Well, we believe that it takes at least 2 years.
2 years.
To make the EOS system part of the company DNA. And mm-hmm. there's various parts that click in at various times. Sometimes it's, you know, getting those rocks done. I really don't get upset until 12, 13, 14 months. If they're not getting 60, 70, 80% of their rocks done, then I'm going to wonder what's happening here. To-dos, that the real place of accountability, where we learn that accountability, is the weekly to-dos. In the meetings, yeah. You know, when we've solved the problem, generally there's a to-do that comes out. Somebody says, I'll take responsibility for getting it done. So they learn that you can't have two people or more. It's only one person who takes responsibility for getting it done. Mm-hmm. And then a week later, in the meeting, we're going to go down the list of to-dos from the last week, and we're going to ask, did you get it to done? And we expect 90% of those to done. That's the real learning that equips people to get the 90-day rocks done.
Yeah. And I think it takes grace to realize everybody's learning. Like we actually then did really well because we, you know, everyone's like, well, we're, you know, we have the higher adoption, I think, than I was giving us credit for. If you're saying here and it needs to be 80% or something, I'm like, oh, we're killing it then.
Plus, I tell people there's never in EOS, there's never a failure. We do not have failures.
Yeah.
People have a deep breath. And what do you mean? Well, what I mean is we either get it done, the thing that we said we would do, we get it done, or we learn.
Yeah, that's good.
It's never a failure, because if you have a failure, then I mean we're doing a whole. It's we're learning how to do it, mm-hmm. or we learned that it wasn't worth doing. But we're learning all along, and that's that no failure. We do not fail. We don't have to point fingers at anybody because we're learning about it.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So I mean, it's that mental shift that I believe is the movement.
Yeah.
And so what I'm really curious about is you used Michael Pollan, remember?
Oh yeah, I love him.
Right? Yeah. I was looking at that on my iPad this morning. Was it in the Harvard Business Review that you wrote that article? Is that where you put that?
He's in Harvard Business Review. I think he's also in Resonate, my book. That's
okay, but it was. I did a Google search, and you came up with some article, and then probably. He was there. Uh-huh. And now what I found fascinating and resonated with me was he's sitting there talking about feedlots and how we can change the way we do food. when he begins, people aren't really aware of the problem.
Right.
I mean, people buy hamburgers, they buy steaks, but they have no idea that that takes, what did he say, 26 ounces of oil to make oil. That one hamburger.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not really aware that that industrial meat causes a lot of illness.
Right.
And they're not aware of how much the whole process has an impact on, you know, what kind of impact it has on the globe and the, you know, our atmosphere. But he's enrolling people in a movement and they don't even know there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find that fascinating how you do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, Al Gore did it with global warming or climate change. There has to be somebody, like for a while, people will point at someone and be like, that person's crazy, right? And then you have to have passion. That's why you have to have a lot of passion to keep going. And then eventually heart and mind start to change and then people start to be awakened and realize that, hey, this is a problem or, hey, this is a huge opportunity that we need to take advantage. Because there's either problems or opportunities, right? You're either going... Mm-hmm. after the chalice or you are trying to, you know, flee something harmful. Mm-hmm. And so it is very important to be a strong communicator in those kinds of situations. And I do think that a lot of the problems in our food chain, we can point back to that moment when Michael Pollan, that was his parade, man. He was pointing and waving a flag and very passionate about it, wrote, you know, some great bodies of work to get traction. I think too, what's interesting about your movement specifically is there's the movement of the operating system. And then once your CEOs or executive teams are getting the buy-in, oh, okay, now I've drank the Kool-Aid, I'm on board, I'm going to join this thing. Then suddenly they're a leader of a movement in their own firm.
Yes.
So now they have
yes.
to, so there's the bigger movement, but then they have to become leaders of a movement and lead their own teams and their own people through a movement. Building consensus, building momentum, getting buy-in. It's work, but it's going to be worth it.
But that to me is the, what you've just put your finger on is what to me is the shift in my picture. Mm-hmm. Because before, 6 months ago, I was running around looking for people who had pain. They had a problem, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the medicine for it. Mm-hmm. And that set me up with a whole different thing. I mean, I'm the magician or the doctor or something, and that wasn't it. And I discovered that really the people I'm looking for are the people who want to transform.
Yeah,
they want to be bigger, better, but it's not because we have to. It's because that's my passion, is to get better.
It's because their vision. Like, I think the leader's vision is going to require the kind of alignment. You can't get traction. You can't grow. You can't do things without alignment. I've been on my own journey there. My exec team went for about 2.5 years without alignment because we had an exec that was just a provocateur instead of a wouldn't align, right? So I think the leader has to want this and has to want to be transformed into something that'll make them great in the future. So you've nailed it. They may not have a terrible problem to solve. They may just need to be a different shaped in a different way to meet a future need. Like, my client desire and behavior shifts like every 18 months, right? And I have to anticipate it and be mm-hmm. at the right place in the future to meet them there.
Right.
And
right.
I think the stronger leaders do that.
All right. So it began that the conversation was in go look for those people who want to transform. All right. So that was helpful. And then what I'm discovering now is that they will want to be part of the movement in their company. And mm-hmm. and so it's not really looking for people who are already aware of the desire to make a change.
Right.
It's somehow inviting them, enrolling them in this opportunity that they may choose to implement or they may choose to just watch, but they're part of a movement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a question that I have is, what is it that I'm moving people from and to. And that's part of the conversation, yeah, I think, that we're, as a whole country, are having right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's situational. I think it's different things. I mean, it could be everything from, there's different moments in a movement where you need to move people in different ways, right? So if you looked at something that's going to be a four-year project, they're going to need different types of emotional fuel at different types. They're going to need different kinds of behavior at different moments. And so there is one great big movement. You declare, hey, we're going to be doing this one big thing, and in 4 years, we're going to look like this. And you have to be able to paint in really beautiful language this hopeful thing everyone's headed toward. Because if they don't have this really clarion vision that looks like it's this new bliss and this new future they're signing up for, it's going to be a slog to get anyone there.
So let me try something with you. Can I do that?
Yeah.
So if we were meeting again 3 years from today, looking back over those 3 years, what, and you were, you know, 3 years, what has to have happened during that period for you to be really happy with your progress with your business?
You want me to literally answer what my 3-year vision is? Is that what you're saying?
Sure. Why not? Sure. So if we were meeting here 3 years from today, looking back over those 3 years, what has have to have happened in that period for you personally to feel really happy with your progress?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. For me personally, as the leader, right now I'm in a lot of the operations. So for a long time, because I'm an author, I traveled, I did keynotes, I got to be a mad scientist, and I got to write. But I've stepped back in as an operational leader in the last 18 months. So if I were to be 3 years out from now, I want to be able to look back and I want to say, I never could have done it without the brilliant executive team I have. My life and role is easier than it's ever been because they carry the responsibility of the business and they share it on their shoulders. And it's a highly, highly functioning team that moves as one and trusts each other. Huh. That would be my vision.
All right. So what are the dangers? What are the things that could make that not happen?
I think misalignment would be one of them. Mm-hmm. I think not having shared values. And mm-hmm. I have both of those now, and I haven't always had that on the exec team. Mm-hmm. If your goals for the year or the quarter are too lofty, it can create more discouragement than it should. Mm-hmm. I think not stopping and celebrating how far we've come is it's easy to do as leaders, right? Because we have a lot of drive and passion. We could go for miles. And I think it's pausing and making sure your team can let off steam mm-hmm. when it needs to. Otherwise, it just builds and builds and builds. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Okay. So what are the opportunities that you have right now that you want to maximize? You want to, you know, make sure that you're taking advantage of in this 3 years?
Yeah, right now as an organization, we are sitting on a powder keg of opportunity. Mm-hmm. This year I did something interesting. I got growth advisors. I asked people, some I knew and some I didn't know well, if they would be my growth advisors. And I was startled that these people would do it for a tiny stipend. Mm-hmm. And they looked under the hood of my marketing and they looked under the hood of my sales. And they told me, they were like, Nancy, this is for the taking. Like, you should be four times the size you are if you mm-hmm. could get, you know. And so I've kind of submitted to these external advisors, which has been a blast. So I would say that the opportunity is, and we have alignment around it, and it's been miraculous to watch everybody understand the margins on that side of the house are greater and the effort to grow that is so much easier. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would look back and be really proud of the fact that if we really hit the pedal on it and we grow this one product offering, we have 4X in 4 years. That's the big goal. 4X, 4 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it even sounds good when it comes off the tongue.
Yeah.
But that's what we're going to work hard to do.
Mm-hmm. So what are the strengths then, would you say, that you have right now that you want to make sure that you're building off of?
Wow, I think the strength of the brand, the halo effect of the strength of the brand is strong. I think I have some of the smartest people on the planet that are master storytellers. So I think that we're a communication firm, and it would be hypocritical if they weren't all great communicators. Mm-hmm. So I think the strength of our comms, internal and external, is a strength. I think our values are a strength. I think if you asked anyone at my firm what our values are, they'd be able to tell you. Hasn't always been that way. Mm-hmm. But this last year, everybody here knows the values, mm-hmm. that's belong, lead, innovate, and serve. So we've just done a lot of heavy lifting around unity. And we're just, this year's theme is that we're focused and fierce. And everybody's just pulled, we've just done it. We're focused and fierce, and we're seeing a lot of results from that.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about those, that mismanagement, not having shared values, that's not something that's going to happen because you already have it down here as a strength, right?
Right.
So are you thinking that you might lose that alignment and, is that what you think might be a danger, is you might lose the shared values?
Oh, I was thinking the question was more about what happens to anybody. Like, what are the things that threaten?
No, I'm thinking of for you.
Oh, okay.
When you think about what you wanted to be 3 years from now, what is the danger there?
Oh, I see. I thought you were thinking, asking what is, what's a roadblock to any dream, any company dream. So a roadblock would be if values aren't aligned, and we have done that.
Right.
So the roadblocks for our, so skip all the answers to that. I was just thinking, generally, what are the roadblocks? Mm-hmm. I think roadblocks for us in this short future right now, mm-hmm. we have, right now I'm in the Silicon Valley. This is a really difficult place to do business. Mm-hmm. It is very expensive. And every day the tax laws change in California, that's less people I get to employ. Mm-hmm. And that's terrible, right? And so we're having to look at that. We have about a 50% or we have about a 55% remote workforce. Mm-hmm. So we are needing to have to come up with ways to collaborate remotely in a way that creates the same high level of creative output as when people are in a room whiteboarding together, because we do a lot of visual problem solving. Mm-hmm. And we have a new office just launched this week, too, in New York. We have 10 people there. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that office may grow as big, if not bigger, than our Silicon Valley one. So on my mind is, how do you manage the culture and the team? You know, how do you pick the right person to lead that effort so that it becomes sustainable?
So you could hire the wrong person.
I know. One person in an office like that can just destroy the whole culture.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, that's the kind of stuff you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we've got the values buttoned up and stuff. So,
how are you going to make sure that you hire the right person?
Well, right now I'm looking to hire a head of growth, and, they didn't make it past the first gate if they didn't share the values. So mm-hmm. right now, the good news is we have a couple people out there. One of them transferred from here, from headquarters, mm-hmm. out to New York. And then the others that he's attracting are very much like-minded. We call them dwarshans. So far we've done a really good job attracting people of like-mindedness. And we're trying to filter out people. One of the most important parts of our values is serve. So it's belong, lead, innovate, and serve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with how aggressive software companies are and how aggressive tech companies are and how aggressive they are, there's not a lot that could wave a flag proudly and say one of our values is to serve. And I think that there's a profile of people who would serve versus come with their own agenda. Mm-hmm. So we definitely have gotten good or we're trying to get better anyway, at filtering those out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you said one of the dangers was, this whole new thing of working remotely in a highly graphic organization that does a lot of collaboration. How are you dealing with that?
There's a lot of creative problem solving. So We everyone has iPads. So there's the story, the people that collaborate around the words, and there's people who collaborate around the pictures. Mm-hmm. So we all have Zoom. We also, all the creative people who, a lot of my writers too will draw what we call visual notes, but mostly the designers, they all have iPads with pens on them. Mm-hmm. We're also looking at this really cool lit glass so that people can storyboard looking at a Zoom camera, and it mirror images it, and clients can, it feels like you're right there at the whiteboard with our team.
Well, tell me more about that. What is that?
I can't remember what it's called. I don't remember what it's called, but it's across the freeway from us and we've had demos of it, but there's a way to stand at this whiteboard with whiteboard markers, and I'm looking through the glass at the camera, and the people on the other side of the camera, it flips the image form, so you can see straight up a whiteboard, but I don't have my back turned to the camera. So mm-hmm. I don't turn around and you look at my back while I write. I can look straight at you through this glass at the camera and be writing on the glass. It's beautiful.
Oh, so you gotta find out more about
demoed
that.
It. Yeah, the team's already demoed it. It's pretty exciting.
All right. Okay, so these are tools that you're using with Zoom to be able to talk back and forth with writing on the board, because I find that so difficult to be writing on the board. Today I was with a friend and he was showing me the new Google Jamboard, which I didn't think really solved that problem that you're talking about, is how do we talk to people while we're writing? That's great. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So when you think about these opportunities, this you're going to 4X it in 4 years. Mm-hmm. What is it? Is part of the starting an office in New York? Is that part of taking advantage of this?
Yeah, part of it is having people who, will take care of our biggest markets in a very present way. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine wrote a fantastic book, Tiffany Bova. It's called Growth IQ. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting is when I got the book, it showed different ways that you could do growth. And I realized that my service business needed to do different things to grow than my product business, which is a training company. That needed another different kind of activities to make sure it grew. Mm-hmm. And so I think for the services business, proximity to our clients was very, very important. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the product business, like product expansion and sales optimization were the most important things. So as we're looking at the kind of energy between the two different business units, I realized, wow, they both needed very different things to be able to hit this growth trajectory.
Hmm. So you hit a warm place for me when you talk about sales optimization. What does that mean in your business? Does that mean more cold calls?
No, I think optimizing has, in my world, it has a lot to do with what is the experience like? What is the buyer's journey like? How are they treated? What's the customer experience like? Mm-hmm. What is the process like? How frictionless is the process? Mm-hmm. And all of those kinds of things. You know, it's not just the sales reporting. It's the journey that the customer's going on to make you a brand they want to buy from. So she does have a client experience in there too, as another way to grow. Mm-hmm. You know, reducing churn. Some of it was kind of some classic go-to-market stuff, but mm-hmm. for me, she modernized it with incredibly relevant stories. It's a great book.
Called Growth IQ. Yeah.
Growth IQ, Tiffany Bova.
Okay, good. And so you've got a strong brand, smartest people on the planet, great storytellers. How do you maximize that to achieve your 4X in 4 years?
Oh, well, I was talking in generalities, I think, when I was giving you those things. So right now, we're sitting on a powder keg of, I have massive leads. I have hundreds of thousands of names that have signed up to be on our newsletters that we don't communicate with. I've got marketing automation is not automated. My pipes aren't all connected, and they should be. And my team, the leads come in so hot. The sales team doesn't know really how to prospect yet. So I'm bringing in people to do call hygiene and how to do prospect. One guy, just from doing call hygiene on the Salesforce, went from no sales to 200,000 sales in a month. So there's just, I'm literally sitting on, and then of course, bringing in a growth leader, that's going to make all the difference in the world.
Now, growth leader, how far is that away from a sales manager? I don't know.
Well, in this case, I'm looking for what I'm calling a capital S and a small M, someone with sales discipline, sales rigor, winsome, you know, just a, can bring a winsome client experience, and the small M is marketing. So I feel like we have quite an engine going, and I could have done a capital M, small S, right? But I right now I'm looking to do, cause sales has not been a strong discipline in my culture. So I want to bring in somebody to do that.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, what I have found,
I actually have to go. I have a, my next meeting is trying to start right now.
All right. Well, I'm sure we can make some good things of this. What would you, how would you like to end? What would you like to tell people about you?
I just want people to stay encouraged and stay in the game. And I really do think strong communication is what will keep the entrepreneur operating system running really smooth, and being sympathetic, empathetic, and really clear in how you communicate is the best thing you could do.
Excellent. If they want to get in touch with you, what would they do?
Oh, awesome. I my company is Duarte.com. I connect to everyone on LinkedIn. My Twitter is at Nancy Duarte. We have LinkedIn presence. We have web presence. We're kind of all over the place.
Excellent.
You can find us.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Time to be with us. There you go.
Thanks a ton.
And it's been a wonderful time. Just another example of how to make business thrive in California.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.